Blog Talk Radio.
This is Scout Smith on Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith. Today we're talking about engaging one another. Just before we went on hiatus, just before the Easter break, we have been talking about a lot of different issues. We talked about all the different political things that was taking place. We know that here in Georgia, we just ended our legislative session, and I thought this would be a good topic to talk about after coming out of that session, because one of the things that we have to learn how to do is to engage one another. You have to engage one another when it comes to business relationships, personal relationships, and especially when it comes to our civic life. We have to learn how to engage one another. And you would think during a time that we have such technological capabilities, such as social media, we have the 24-hour news cycle in which people can engage, we have independent media, we have all of these different outlets in which we can now talk to each other a lot easier than we have been able to do in the past. And it seems that that has only made it harder to be able to talk to one another. So today I wanted to sit there and I wanted to talk about that a little bit. You know, if you got any feelings on how engagement can be done better, you want to chime in, you're more than welcome to call in at 657-383-0995. That is 657-383-0995. So let's get into it. What's the problem, people? We have a tendency to talk at each other but not talk to each other. Everybody's trying to push their agendas nowadays, and everybody's playing a zero-sum game in which I have to get exactly what I want, or the highway is my way or the highway. And that is not how we're supposed to be acting. That is not how we're going to get anything done. I'm going to first jump into this from a political perspective. Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, we all have different mindsets and different angles in which we're coming at the same problem. This is America, land of the free. I think everybody knows and has this feeling to want to be as free as we possibly can be, but at the same time, we are not respecting each other on a level and which makes compromise even a point of interest, taken from the Democratic point of view. We have no respect for anything that Republicans or Libertarians have to say. We think they're a joke. You know, they want to run around the woods with guns and this, that, and the other, and prep and do all this other crazy stuff. But we don't have any respect for their point of view. The Republicans and Libertarians don't have any respect for our point of view. They don't understand that we want everybody to be free. And I mean, literally, everyone to be free. Free to love who you want to love, free to eat what you want to eat, free to just do whatever. And I mean, so we have this boundary set in front of that my way is better than your way. But in actuality, what has made our country great is the ability for us to find a common ground on which to stand on. No, we can't tax everybody out of existence. But at the same time, we need taxes to be able to fund government. Yes, we need government. Why do we need government? Well, I'm going to tell you why, and I had this conversation with my good friend Doug Craig, former chairman of the Georgia Libertarian Party, on Facebook the other day with some of his people. And I hear some of his people talking about, well, we don't want government. Well, I'm going to tell you that I personally, and this, you know, it's a compromise in this opinion, that we can't operate as a human, government is a human default. If you, the moment you, if you live out by yourself, there's going to be a guy down the road who's going to want what you have, and he's going to get other people involved with him to take what you got, because we automatically know I'm going to need overwhelming force to take what you need, take what I need from you. So then you're going to have to get together with some other people to defend yourself, to protect yourself from this guy over here, and to keep that alliance going, because the threat is going to be constant. There's going to have to be some type of construct put in place, some type of compact, some type of contract on who is going to be in charge, how decisions are going to get made, how are we going to mediate problems in this group. So eventually you will have government. There will never be a point in time where there will not be government. Even if the government and the world as we see it today was to break down, there will still end up being a government. So that's just crazy. That's crazy. We know that is going that's going to happen. So the point is, how do we compromise that? How do we have the programs that Democrats want and yet achieve a government that is limited to not overwhelm the citizenry or become a tyranny? I want y'all to think about that for a second. I want you to marinate on it. We're going to go on break. We'll be right back. This is Dive South and Dirty with Scott Smith. Again, we're talking about engagement, engaging each other. So the question is how do we find that middle ground? How do we find middle ground on being able to deal with issues with inside of our communities without everybody expecting to get their way 100%? We have the same problem inside of the business community. Everybody, you know, I believe in free enterprise, even though I'm a Democrat, you know, and I know my Republican friends, particularly the far-right ones, believe that all of us are socialists, but I am by no means a socialist. I mean, I believe everybody should have the ability to provide for themselves and make money, and if you want to be rich, be rich, but understand that if you're going to be at the top of the food chain, or you're going to be at the top of the social structure, you have a responsibility as a human being to everyone else. And I don't necessarily think that's a socialist function. I mean, there used to be a point in time when rich people took pride in being able to take care of the folks that fell up under their, fell inside of their sphere of influence. You know,
It's just crazy. Nowadays, everybody's kind of selfish about this thing, and it's all for me, and I'm not for anyone else. Now, I have a problem with that. But how do we as businessmen look at women, look at the situations that are going on in our community, because we are just a part of the social situation. We are a major part of the civil engagement of what's going on in our communities. Government creates public sector jobs. Business creates private sector jobs. And when you have both of those entities working together in a nice balance, we have prosperous societies. We can't eliminate public altogether, and we can't eliminate private, but how do we do that? How do we bring all of those things together? How do we do that? It's one of those questions that we seem to have a hard time answering in the 21st century. I was talking to some individuals today, looking at doing some, helping out our community from a business aspect. And some of us are very political, and some of us are business oriented. But at the same time, we realize that there has to be something done, because life is not getting better for everyone. And I know some people sit there and say, well, everybody's life is not, but the opportunity should be there for people to better themselves. And some people are taking all the opportunity and sucking it up. Sucking up all the opportunity because they're not looking to engage in one. I got a caller in. Let me take this caller. Good afternoon, caller. You're down south and dirty with Scott Smith. State your name. Tell us where you're from, and let's get dirty.
Good afternoon, Scout Smith, and you know who this is. This is your former partner in crime, Stacy. Official, Stacy Hopkins. I'm in Hayville, Georgia, and I'm cooking.
You cooking? What you cooking today? I know it's funny, so what you putting down?
I'm making some jambalaya. I got some fresh corn. I got macaroni and cheese. I got tossed salad. When I cooks, baby, I cooks.
Oh, see, you best be glad I can't get to Hayes today, because I'd be coming over my place, and you know you still owe me some cookies, so we ain't going to play that.
I do. But, I really do. I do. But, and I do like to bake, so you know what? I got you on the cookie. I got you. For
right.
Real.
So what's on your mind?
Well, I was listening, and you hit on the topic that just about anybody who does advocacy work or in the political world or in activism, deals with. And I used to be a part of the coffee party, which it was kind of one of our goals to help people find common ground. And it's not as easy as people think. And as a matter of fact, I was having a conversation with a Facebook friend along the lines of this topic. And the first thing, before you even think about achieving common ground, you have to not only be able to talk to each other, but you have to listen. And
right.
We do a really, really good job of talking to or at or down to each other. We don't do a really good job at listening to what's being said and what comes back. And if we don't like what's coming back, we shut it down. And, it's very, very difficult when you see what's going on. I don't think people understand that it's a process to reach common ground. I think that there are times where people, there's kind of a two different camps on how you do that. Some say, you've got to be nonpartisan. I don't agree with that. You should absolutely be partisan during the first process, which is constructive dialogue. And that's where you get your best ideas that create a bipartisan bill or creates a consensus that everyone can agree on. And, what you said in the, earlier was dead spot on. Once you agree to common ground or bipartisanship or consensus, 100% of what you want comes off that table. You are not going to get it. and everybody is so all or nothing. Everybody is so in search of, you know, looking for that perfect beat. And this is why nothing gets done. This is why we have these meetings, you know, groups get together and we have these epic long meetings because no one can agree. And you also have to come in, you also, in order to achieve common ground, you have to have common goals. Now, if you're sitting down and, like, say politics, I'm going to use politics because that's what you and I deal with a lot. If your side, you just want to win, and my side, I'm trying to actually help a certain contingent or a certain demographic, we're not going to come to common ground because in order to win, you will do anything. You don't care because you just want to win. I want to help. So right there, we're not going to come on common ground because we're coming on two different things. Now, if right. we can have an amalgamation of that, you can win and you can help. But if you're just solely focused on that particular part, you're going to run into that clash that we always do. And it's very, very, it's frustrating for me to see and to experience. And it'd be really nice if we, you know, one of the good things about the coffee party was that it was really designed to try and teach people how to interact with each other. Kind of fell apart. Well, you know, sometimes movements and things do that. But what I'm seeing now, I'm seeing people who are very, very hyper-partisan, and you can't bring them to the table. You got some folks who are foaming at the mouth mad, and I can't even deal with it. When I say you're too far gone for me, you're far gone. And there's some people out there who are really, really out there. And I have conservative friends. I have libertarian friends. I have, you know, Democrats. I've got Greens. We may not always, we all agree there's a problem. Where we differ is the solutions. And whether right. it's a social movement or politics, that seems to be the wall that we hit all the time.
Yeah, you know, and it's a shame that you talk about it. We don't got into this thing where, like you said, we're hyper-partisan. And I've even seen that roll over into personal life, whereas if you look into families, you kind of see families got hyper-partisan. You got
feminists. Oh, families worse.
And you got male domination, female domination, child oriented. You have all of these different directions people want to go in. Because even in households, you got women nowadays saying, "Hey, I'm a woman. I'm strong and I'm empowered, and I need you to treat me a certain way, and I need this, that, and the other." And the men are saying, "Well, yes, I'm a man, and I feel like we need to be in traditional situations, and I need this and I need that." And then you got the kids saying, "Well, hey, what about us? We need you to give up our time." And nobody is wanting to give any ground on what they're feeling. And we got families falling apart for that exact same reason. And so if you got the family falling apart for that, and then you got the business community falling apart for that, and then you got the political, come on now. And it's probably just as bad in the church. We just don't see it as much because, you know, they like to keep stuff hush hush over there. Everybody always smiling and giving along. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, in the church, no. That is the heart of dysfunction. They may smile up there and wait till you walk away. That's when, see, the stuff, you know, it's a hypocrisy, and there's always the cool side of the pillow. But the church congregation, they're no different.
Yeah,
they're no
exactly.
different. I've seen some high petty stuff come out of there. So, I'm not down in the church or saying that anybody's a bad person before y'all start hitting me up on Facebook or social media. But, I mean, we're human. And we're all, but I think this whole, there's a sense of competitiveness that we have, you know, between the age-old battle between men and women. We're never going to get it right until we realize we're equals. You know, a man, he has certain advantages you know, we all have certain qualities that make us different, but it doesn't make you better. And until we start respecting each other for what we can do and working together as a partnership, we're going to be battling each other. And the church does help perpetuate that because of, you know, religious, I mean, it's based in religious texts where that's where it begins. And like Shirley Chisholm said, you know, the minute you start catching hell as a woman is the time they say it's a girl. So, you know, we have to start looking at things a little differently and start think, you know, we talk about equality and things of that nature, but it still comes down to one is supposedly better than the other. We're not. We work in conjunction. We work in harmony. And that's what's
right.
missing, whether you're talking about advocacy or the political realm. We don't even work in harmony with the planet. You know, we think we are the superior being, and Mother Nature is telling us, no, I don't think so. So, but it's really, it's hard.
And I'm glad you brought that up with the harmony with the planet, because there's this movement taking place that I just, you know, and I just thought about it myself a couple of weeks ago where we, you know, as chairman of the Georgia Democratic Rural Council, we decided we were going to tackle the environment first. Then I was on a call just the other night with PVA, and they were talking about, you know, all the different issues we tackle. The environment is the one thing that encompasses it all, because all of our behaviors as human beings affect the environment. And when I was listening to that, even when we talk about mass criminalization, mass incarceration, that has an effect on our environment. And I was like,
well,
you know what? That's so deep. Because we actually should be living in a synergistic relationship with our world. And so we got people that are supposed to be in one place, you know, living happy, prosperous lives, but we're all taking place in them in a prison somewhere. That prison's footprint affects the environment. They're generating a massive amount of trash. They got prison factories that are putting out pollution. And you know that since it's a prison, nobody's really caring about the conditions of the people that are there. That has an effect. And we don't even think about how, you know, bad is, but, you know, we like to think our poorest neighborhoods are usually in places that all kinds of craziness is going on. I know we was back in LaGrange. We was looking at all the high transmission power lines went through and read it.
Yeah.
Why are people's houses? And, what kind of effect does that have on health care? Which then, you know, now we talk about the rising cost of health because of the environmental condition. Then that goes, next means back around again to that being the biggest thing that affects our economy, is because the thing that will cause you to go into bankruptcy the quickest is health bills.
I mean, it does. I mean, the environment, for me, it's pretty basic. None of this matters. No matter what you're doing, if there's no sustainable planet for us to do anything, money don't mean a thing. None of this means a thing. You know, as far in terms of mass incarceration, we'll all be dead, and it won't be as selective as mass incarceration is. But, you know, we really do have some major issues, and that is definitely one of them. I mean, I don't need, in terms of, and I know we're digressing a bit, but in terms of the environment, you know, I am 52 years old. I don't need a study. I don't need a panel. I don't need some scientists telling me what I can see with my very own eyes. You know, and anyone, you are in denial if you can't look around you and see that the seasons are getting shorter, that we're having more and more violent episodes. We're seeing things like tornadoes where they usually aren't tornadoes, you know. And it's really, really, you know, it's kind of like we're digressing to the dark ages when we thought the world was flat. And but nothing matters unless, you know, in the grand scheme of things, until we start taking care of this planet and realizing, you know, Newton's third law says that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. We can't continue shooting stuff in the ground and expect it to just be benign. We can't expect that our consumerism doesn't have a byproduct that is harmful to the environment. And we just have to realize that, but that's where it dips over to the political world, because we have people who are in office who they're dodos. And we need to make them extinct because, you know, they're not trying to hear it. Unless you a dollar bill, they ain't trying to hear it.
This is a true statement.
And it's really sad. And one of the saddest things, you know, that happened was last week you had a man who killed himself in D.C. over campaign finance reform, and then the guy who flew the chopper. The little chopper in there, also on campaign finance reform. What did they talk about? You didn't hear about the man who committed suicide. That was a blip on the radar. And then for the guy who flew the chopper, they were talking more about the chopper instead of the issue why he did it. So
exactly.
You know, it's
and that comes down to, again, when we go back to the original subject we talking about is engagement, is that people are trying to do all types of things to get the attention of folks and
to be listened to. They want to be listened to. No one's listening to them.
We more worried about the gyrocopter going in there from a homeland security standpoint, then we were worried about, hey, this man had a statement he was trying to make. What statement was he trying to make? You know, what was he trying to say? You know, it's still, because it was a homeland security violation, did that, for some kind of reason, nullify his First Amendment rights to be heard? And he felt like I had to go to an extreme to be heard. Now I know I got people out there who say, so, okay, now Scott, it's okay for us to blow up buildings to do that. No, it's not okay to blow up buildings. But this guy, that was pretty peaceful. All he did was fly in a gyrocopter and land. If there wasn't a bomb on him and he didn't have a gun, they should let that mess go.
And bless his little heart, he tickled me. He was like, well, you know, I'm sure they wouldn't blow a 60-something-year-old man out the sky. And it's like, where you been? You know, if it wasn't for his friend calling and putting the word out, they would have blasted him to Miami. If it was you or I, we'd be sitting up there talking about, you know, Scout, he was all right. You know, but
the moment the helicopter landed and they seen I was black, they'd be like, he has a gun, shoot him. And then they came over and laid a gun next to me. And then they would look around for everybody to see if anybody had any, and they had their phone up, and then they would have went to jail because they're going to get smarter sooner or later. Them cell phones are going to get you.
Yeah, I'd have to lead a protest.
Tell me about that. You was at the last protest on the 15th. And this is an engagement.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I love me a good protest. And, you know, it's kind of like when we do these events, it's kind of like a reunion for us in the activist community. But it was really, really good because I started out with the Walmart protest. And that's where it really resonated from. But we were down at Clark Atlanta University, in between Snick Way. You know, they renamed some streets down there, so it was good to be back in the West End and see where a lot of my money went when my daughter went to Spelman. But we got together, and it was really, really good because to see the movement grow. That it has, it wasn't, you know, people think it's just fast food workers and, you know, if you flip a burger, why do you deserve $15 an hour? And the question is, if you mad because you making $15 an hour, the question is, why aren't you making more money? But if this is the economy that we're left with, and if this is the opportunities that people have to raise their families, then no, $15 is not enough. And so it was labor. It was NAACP. It was various groups and organizations, 9to5 Atlanta, Georgia Stand Up, a lot of the local rabble rousers who were there. And it was really, really good to see the love. We had a lot of Democrats who were out there. If Republicans won, I'm sure they would have been welcome if they liked to come. I can't say whether or not they were invited. I didn't organize it, but I didn't see any out there. But we had Senator Vincent Ford and Senator Nan Orrick. Representative Dewey McClain was there. Representative Abel Mabel was there. And we had a good time, you know, firing people up. You had a lot of people from different states. You had Alabama. You had South Carolina there. And it was good to, you know, let people know that the movement was there. It was really great because I was standing on the hill taking some pictures. And just to see, you know, how it had grown from just like, you know, maybe 20, 30 people to, you know, it was easily a couple of hundred out there. So,
yeah, I was noticing from your pictures. I noticed a couple of faces from some of the young people that showed up to some of the Moral Monday planning meetings back in 2014.
And yeah, Tim Franzen.
Right, and it was good to see all of those people, even some of the young people who I knew came from the, like there was a young man I seen you take a picture of, and I can't remember his name, but I remember him. He worked for Burger King. I don't know if he's still there or not now.
Oh, that's my boy Joshua. My man Joshua
Collins. And he was working for Burger King. He gave a presentation to us at Moral Monday's planning meeting last year, and I was good, glad to see his face because I always wonder, you know, when young people like him get involved, do they stay involved? And to see his face, that gave me hope that, okay, this brother done found, you know, found his niche, and he's still there, and, you know, and he was doing his thing. He had a bullhorn in his hand. See, the last time I seen him, he was just standing in line chatting. Now he got a bullhorn in his hand. So, you know,
That man right there is king of the turn-up. Actually, it was last year at Burger King on Northside Drive when he first grabbed the bullhorn, and we all stood back and was like, look at you. But I think what's really wonderful is that, you know, I'm considered part of the, you know, the old school, you know, and there has been a bit of division, particularly with Black Lives Matters and other movements where you have a clash of the ignorance of youth meets the obstinacy of old. And I think we are starting to learn how to not only talk to each other, listen to each other and learn. So, you know, and Charlie Fleming, Georgia president of AFL-CIO, you know, he said it best, this isn't about me. This is not about AFL-CIO. This is about y'all. And it was really good to see the young workers, you know, and just the workers in general step up and claim this. You know, I kind of feel like, you know, old school, we have our place, and we're not all meant to occupy the same circle. You know, some of us are best suited in the political realm. Some of us are best suited to, you know, be out there and be the wild ones. And I'm going to tell you, you know, sometimes, you know, that's best. But we're starting to learn, starting to listen to, you know, what we need to do. And we're starting to work together. And it was really good to see some old familiar faces. But we didn't, you know, those activists who have been in this game for a little bit, we, you know, and there's an old saying, you know, if you step up, you know, step back. And that's kind of what we're seeing going. And it was really, really good. We had a speaker, a student from Morehouse, young brother, I think he's a seminary student, and he made some really, really good remarks about the impact of on college students. You know, and we had adjunct, well, I don't think any were actually present, but the movement also includes adjunct professors, you know, home health care workers, and everybody was representing airport workers, although I don't think there were too many out there that day. But it was just, you know, to see it and to see it go on worldwide, it was just, it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. And I have a Facebook friend of mine. She came up from, I think it was Coweta County. I know she had quite a ride. It took her an hour ride to get there. And she brought her daughter.
Right.
You know, and it was
the end of the world.
Well, so you know how I look at it. That's out of town. If you're outside of 285,
right.
You're out of town. So she came
right.
from out of town. But it was just really, really beautiful. And it's kind of, you know, I wasn't there in 63 for the Civil Rights Movement. I love it. I study it a lot. But this is all history repeating, and this is how we're going to do it. And it's going to take, you know, it's going to be hard. It's really, really going to be difficult.
Right. I mean, we sit there and we were just having this conversation again today on Facebook about the $15 an hour and this, that, and the other. And, you know, we had to sit there and talk about the fact that this was not necessarily about fast food. That this,
no.
You know, I was talking about social workers because, you know, I worked in social work for about 2 or 3 years, and we were all making $8, $9, maybe $10 an hour. And having to live in a house with kids, you know, that were at risk and expected to come up with treatment plans and this, that, and the other. And we're talking about serious work. And you're not even able to scrape by living for yourself at the same time trying to help somebody else get their life together. And I think they deserve a lot better pay. I know personal care workers don't make any money. And I've seen that some of those people are out there. And we got to sit there and think about this $15 an hour movement is not just about people flipping burgers. This is about people all over the labor spectrum who are not being paid what they were worth. We got another caller. I think my homegirl from Philly, Monica Wright, is on.
Okay. Well, I'm going to bow. Hello?
Monica, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am. One moment. Let me take it off speakerphone.
All right.
Yes, I'm here.
Well, Monica, how you doing? I'm glad to finally get you on here down south and dirty. How's the weather in Philly?
Oh, the weather is beautiful, beautiful. And
I'm so
happy to be on your show, yes.
Well, we've been sitting here talking about engaging one another. Me and my good friend, Stacey Hopkins, who is an activist here in the Atlanta area, she was just giving me a rundown on what had taken place on the 15th with the $15 wage movement taking place.
And the union.
Yeah, so she was just giving us a rundown on that. So now, Monica, tell me about what you got going on up in Philly.
Okay. What I'm working on, I founded an organization about 15 years ago called the Association of Child Daycare Providers Incorporated. And for about 12 years, we ran 24-hour child care in 4 different locations around the city. And we also represented child daycare providers, what I call small setting child daycare providers. In the city of Philadelphia, you can have a family daycare home or group daycare home, and those types of daycares serve 12 children or less. So what we have now in 2009 to 2011, basically the Pennsylvania economy crashed, and it sort of killed off a lot of small daycare providers. Most of our customers lost their job in 2009. All of us who were receiving subsidized payments for our clients. we did not get paid from July to October. And so, you know, that people couldn't pay their mortgages. I couldn't pay my staff. You know, parents had to come together and bring food into the daycare. It was really pretty bad. And then after that, people lost their jobs, and the federal government gave unemployment benefits for 2 years. So we are just coming out of that whole fiasco here in Pennsylvania. What I'm doing now is we repurchased the building, and we're getting back into the 24-hour childcare game. So, you know, besides that, I just really been reaching out, you know, amongst our people and really trying to figure out what are the true needs in our community and how can we all rebound from what has happened to our economy, what has happened to our race with the crack epidemic. And, you know, everything seems to be in shambles, and I've just been reaching out to people to see what we can all do to get back on our feet.
So one of the things, I know you talked to me a little bit about the strategies of what you've been, you know, what you've been trying to do, and this, then the other, we've talked about the dollar, which I'm going to nail my dollar here soon. But we want to talk about, you know, how have you went about it trying to engage your community? Because I know, and we've been talking to different people from around the country during the time period I've been doing the show, that we all seem to have the same issues. We have the same problems, but
yeah,
we have the only differences, it seems to be, is basically geography and maybe the makeup of our government system. Because I know, like, the folks in Chicago got something different going on because of where that government is constructed. And I know that in New
right.
York and up north, it's constructed a little bit differently. And down here, down south, particularly because we have such large Republican-run government, that we got a whole other situation going on. But when it comes to the hood, we all have African-American elected officials in our neighborhood who are not helping out our situation. So we've noticed that is the common thread, that we have to find ourselves engaging each other to try to get them to do their jobs. Are you having that same issue in Philadelphia?
Yeah, well, here's what happened to me personally. You know, it started that I made a conscious decision to try to reopen my daycares, and that opportunity opened up because I wrote a very simple letter to the mortgage company that had a lien on a property I was interested in. And with that one simple letter, I got a mortgage company executive to forgive a $40,000 debt. And so I said, okay, well, cool, now I'm rolling. And so I went to a community lender here in Philadelphia. It's called Entrepreneur Works. And I applied for a $20,000 loan. Now, I initially got turned down, and I got accused by this community lender of having a nonprofit so I wouldn't have to pay taxes. And I had to sit there and think about it and say, wait a minute, I have 5 children. So I haven't really paid taxes all these years because I always qualified for the earned income credit. I was always low income. And so, you know, I was also able to prove that for the 12 years that I owned daycares, that we paid payroll tax, we paid city, we paid state, we paid federal. I actually employed people. And, you know, I took that information along with 2 community activists. And we went down to this community lender, and we raised hell, okay? And so they rethought their decision. They gave me a $20,000 loan. So I said, cool. I said, I want to see what we can build on our own in our community. So we made settlement on the property, and I started to go to every Black organization, call up every guy that I knew, and I said, we ought to be able to reopen this daycare, get it renovated. It's paid for. I got some cash. And I said, let me go to these different brothers and see. And that's when I learned something just super disturbing and heartbreaking, was that, you know, we needed to get the electric on. and there was not one black guy who knew of or could find what was called a But we needed someone to look at the building and put a little safety sticker on our electrical box so we could get the electric turned on. And so went to the guys at the UNIA. You know, they did a whole bunch of hollering and pontificating and had me call this dude who called that dude who called another dude. And I never got anybody to put that sticker on until I asked a Jewish developer that I knew. And so he gave me the number of a black guy who charged me $350 to call some white guys from outside of Philly that only charged him $50 to come in and give me that little sticker, okay? From there, I said, well, you know, this, I guess it really started to hurt my feelings that I started to really see that within our community, I could not find black men who could help open up a very small 2.5-bedroom house and change it into a 24-hour daycare, okay? And, you know, the same thing that happened with the electric happened with a lot of the system repairs. Now, I will say in defense of black men, I'm not trying to say that, you know, black men can't build a 2.5-bedroom house, because I started to do some things online. And a brother came forward who joined with, I had two Hispanics that were helping me. In the end, I had to go get two Hispanic guys that worked on the house, even continued to work after the money ran out, okay? And then a brother that was in an online group that I started came, and he started to help them. So he was, I got an African-American involved. One guy, okay, that was able to actually do some hands-on work. I didn't want to keep talking, Scout, if you want to say anything to what I've said so far, you know.
No, I'm just tracking to it. I'm just taking it in, because what I'm gathering is, and we've talked about this before. We've talked about this to some length about how, you know, people in our community, like DeRay is saying, talk about we need to help each other out, but then when we reach out and ask for help, nobody seems to know what to do, how to do it, or willing to do it without one either. And if they did do it, like you're talking about, the guy charged you $300 to go get somebody to do it for $50, you know, sometimes we have to do some things to help each other out and not always be worried about our profit margin. And I understand that I'm a business man myself, and I understand that I got to make money, but sometimes we got to be a blessing to our own community.
So, you know, to what I started to do, I started to see certain patterns. I started to see that, you know, I started a Facebook group, and Scout, you've been a part of that group for a while, so you've seen what's going on. But it started with me just, I started reading what people were putting on Facebook, and when I first got on there, I was believing the stuff people were putting on Facebook. So if a guy got on Facebook and said, I want to build in our community, we need to have our own schools, we need to do this, we need, I was believing it. And so I said I would contact the person and say, hey, here's what I'm doing in Philly, and could you help? And in a very strange pattern, it didn't matter who I approached and said, hey, could you help? I think by the time I started doing this, what had happened was a white blogger in Philadelphia had given me a $100 donation just on GP. Hey, you're doing this project in Kensington. I'm from Kensington. Here go $100, and I'm going to put you out there. And so I said, okay, boy, that was easy. So I got on there, and I started contacting the African-American men on Facebook, and the same thing happened over and over again. Why are you asking me? I do things in my community, but I it doesn't mean I'm down with what you're doing. You know, and so I started getting these very similar responses that I had this bad attitude, or I didn't ask them right to help me. And so I started my own Facebook group. And so I said, well, let's do this. Let's see if we can get people to give $1, okay? Not to my project. I tried to choose the most sympathetic project that I could think of, and that was a sister in Philadelphia that owns a whole city block. She's 84 years old. She has taken in thousands of foster kids for the last 50, 60 years. And I said, let me see, can I get some of these people who were talking all this revolutionary stuff to mail a dollar? And I think I've run maybe about 400 people through my group. And I think Sister Falaka Fatah got about a good $30. And again, I saw these similar responses. Well, if she gets the dollar, how we know what she's going to do with this dollar? And I was like, really? You're really concerned if you send a dollar to an 84-year-old, what she's going to do with that dollar? So there was, it was just strange to me that responses were similar over and over again. And, you know, our group has evolved, though. We have a SUSU, which we all chip in $22, and we have 12 participants. We've lost three over 4 months, but tomorrow we'll make our second distribution from the SUSU. So we have gotten somewhere in 4 months. We've gotten 12 people out of a group of 200 to contribute $22 every 60 days. And then we lend out to somebody in the group. But I guess what really troubled me was these similar responses. And when I find myself starting to get it at the root, that across this nation, pretty much all of us are broke and stressed out, and that we take out this brokenness in very specific ways, almost down to the same wording. You know, that I realized that a lot of the guys who got super, super angry that I asked them to contribute to my daycare, I said $5 or $10. They got super angry. And I realized that there are a lot of people. If 50% of us are in poverty, there were people who said, I can't get to the post office. I don't have a stamp. Maybe it's people that didn't have a dollar. You know, I guess I'm trying to figure out the roots of what's really going on in our community. And I know that there's a lot of pontificating where, you know, we're living cooped up with relatives, we're broke, and maybe that shiny pair of white sneakers is all we got. You know what I'm saying? But we're not going to admit it. We'd rather lash out at each other, you know, mm-hmm. than actually admit that.
Right, right. Because I remember when I got into the conversation about this dollar, I mean, at first I got kind of angry just watching the whole conversation about the dollar. I got into my feelings about the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But then when me and you talked one-on-one about the dollar, I got to understanding, you know what? It's something that I spent a dollar on that I probably could have did without. Now, true enough, there's something about moving that dollar that seems it's like moving a rock. I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like moving a rock. Because me and you, maybe been about, 3 weeks with me, you talking about this dollar, and I still haven't moved this dollar yet. And I'm sitting here looking at the dollar in my wallet right now. But it's something about moving that dollar.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is,
and
I'm going through this exercise, I'm trying to analyze it myself because I really want to give this dollar, but this dollar won't move. Okay, what is it about our mental situation that is making it hard? Because you see all kinds of people giving money on Kickstarter and Indiegogo and Raleigh and this, that, and other. Folks are getting bank. But then when we come to something that's very real, that's sitting right there in front of us, we have a hard time sharing. We'll share with somebody across the other side of the world, but somebody in our own neighborhood we won't give a dollar to.
Right,
somebody
right.
Somebody that we've built a personal relationship, we won't give a dollar to, or it's very hard. And, I'm going to get that dollar up, though.
Well,
showing the fact of getting just why is it so hard?
Well, you know, I kind of have a theory, and sister, I give you big props for what you're doing. I think it's a beautiful thing, and I don't think the general public knows how hard it is. One of the hardest things to do in this world is to just do what should be the simplest thing and give back. And, you know, it's ultimately funny and heartbreaking to hear your experience. But I think, you know, I'm probably older than both you and Scout. And what I've seen is there is a sickness that is pervasive, not only in the Black community, but society in general. But in the Black community, we have bought into the I got to get mine mentality. Cash rules everything around me. They say they don't have any money, but let a Beyonce concert come up or the new Jordans get released. They got money. There's money there, but we have become disconnected. We have not supported each other financially, which is a really, really big problem. And
right.
And we do not support each other like we used to. The Black churches do not empower us as they used to. They become more in terms of growing their congregation in order, you know, you get the Creflo dollars, you know, I want to buy a jet, or, you know, these prosperity pimps who are in the pulpit, and we've lost the meaning of community. And it's really, really sad, but there are people out there. It's just a matter of targeting and finding that right demographic that's going to do it. There are people who exist out there. They may be like a purple speckled unicorn right now, but they do exist out there, but you're asking the wrong people. The people that you're at, and particularly on social media, you got a lot of folks who are talking loud and saying nothing. And it's really, really frustrating, but you've got to find the right group, and you know, it sounds to me like you're searching and you're finding it, and it's kind of funny what you hear, because we hear the same thing. I mean, it's on loop. I ain't got it. And then, like, you know, people who are questioning what the 80-something-year-old woman's going to do. She ain't going to ball out at this age.
Right.
Go ahead.
Now, I have a different theory now, okay, that I've come this far because, you know, I wondered if it was a social media phenomenon, and I wanted to bring it back local. So I'm actually a paid member of my local Black radio station, which in Philly is WURD. And so I always call in there, and there was one particular radio host who I called in, and, you know, he's very pro men building the community, and that's usually what his show is about. And so I called up and I told him about my project. And so he donated $500, and I put him on our board of directors, and we meet actually online via a project management website so that every receipt, everything that I do in getting this building ready is posted and delivered to everyone's email that's in this project management website. And so month after month, I'm like, okay, I paid this, I did this, the contractor Julio did this, and one person always responds, and it's this one white guy that's on my board of directors, and he's like the only one that's like, hey, that's cool. Well, what color are you going to paint the baseboards? Wow, that looks wonderful. Hey, when are you going to open up? And no matter what I post, he always answers.
Oh,
none of the other people.
we all run into that. I mean,
yeah,
that's
I will say, let me tell the truth. About three or four of the women will chime in maybe about every other month. But the white guy responds to everything I post, and the radio host has to this date responded to not one thing, okay? So I don't want to take up too much time, but to sort of get to the end of the story is that I called up his radio station because he was talking about a program that was building in the Black community, building the story of Black men, and basically, am I still on? Hello?
Yeah, you're still here.
Okay. Basically, some guys who make movies, write books, and create, sponsor a dance troupe got some money to, quote-unquote, build in our community. So I called up and I said, you know, I don't think, like, I got to put baseboards on the first floor so we can do the summer feeding program. And I said, I don't understand why they keep saying that they're building, because a writer, a dancer, and a movie maker can't put the baseboards down, or, you know, or if they can, send them on up, okay? But I don't think you're really building. And so the radio host got really, really angry. And I can call this radio station and get all the guys really, really angry just by telling them, hey, I'm up here in Kensington and I could use a couple dudes to install some baseboards. And what I tried to talk to this particular radio host about was that he kind of came at me like, because he gave me $500, I should shut up. But the mortgage, the payment back to that community lender is $380 a month. The yearly tax on the building is $500. I have a water bill and an electric bill. We don't have gas on yet. We still need a bathroom, a heater, and a stove in the kitchen before we can open up as a daycare, but we're going to do the summer feeding program. I still got drug dealers that stand in front of the building and won't move. If I asked them to move, if I gave a block party, these guys would definitely shoot the block up because they did it for 12 years. I have experience with this particular street. It's in a very bad area of the city. And to me, you're a radio host and you kind of don't understand that $500 was just 80% of the cost of the laminate floor, not the installation, but the cost of buying the laminate floor for the living room, and you want me to shut up because you gave me that money? So I just thought that was strange. This guy does okay, so to get to the point, my theory is that we have probably actively been brainwashed. I'm saying this is beyond just not knowing. But for a guy to get angry because he gave me $500, which was woefully inadequate, you know, that I'm supposed to shut up over $500 when costs come in every month. And when I've got, you know, I had another dude gave me $21, and he didn't want to hear about anything else. Well, $21 bought 4 bins from Dollar General so that we could store some things in the living room. And it was like, how could a grown man not understand the value of that $21?
This is a hard one, and I feel your pain because I've done coordination with volunteers. I've been a volunteer, and I've helped coordinate volunteers. I've had to ask for money, which is something nobody likes to do. And what you're experiencing is difficult, but for me, and I'm just saying from what I heard you say, sometimes what we envision, what we think people should do, is not the role or capacity that they're meant to play. The dude that gave you $500, that's all he's prepared to do, but he did give. And sometimes right. We try to put square pegs in a round hole. It's, you know, so that, you know, he's good for the money. Asking him to do more is probably going to just frustrate you and him, which sounds like what happened. And it's very hard. It's a constant hustle. It's very difficult. I mean, I've had it happen to me where people are like, oh, Stacey, you need to do this, you need to do that. Stacey don't want to do it. And if Stacey don't want to do it, Stacey ain't going to do it. So it's very, you know, you have to, and I think this goes back to engaging. You got to, you know, have a conversation and you know, have a one-on-one conversation with everybody who approaches you, who wants to donate, and just look, how did you find out about it? Talk to them about their lives, talk about other work that they support, and try to get an idea of where they best fit. And for, you know, now there is a problem. Now, I will give you that there is a problem where there are some folks who just, they don't want to do nothing. And you know, they do a lot of bragging about it. But that is probably one of the difficult things, because what you're basically, you're not only an entrepreneur, you're a community organizer. And that is one of the most difficult things of organizing, trying to get the right people in the right fit and to get them in the role they want to play And I struggle with it because it's very, very hard. It's like, you know, people are inundated. You know, everybody's telling them this issue is, you know, the issue you need to work on right away, and this is where you need to be. And people, either they don't know how to get engaged or they don't want to in that particular area that you're trying to push them into. So, you know, maybe just sitting down with people who have expressed interest in trying to find out and asking them, how would you like to help me, instead of you telling them how you think they should be helping you. And maybe you'll get a better response out of them. But I love what you're doing, and I think it's a worthy cause, and there's a special place in heaven for you and the rest of us who do this, because people do not understand the major drama that we go through, whether you're doing politics, whether you're doing advocacy, whether you're doing church work. Some of y'all people out there be putting us through some change. And I really hope it is very, very difficult to do that. And I see a lot of what you're going through every day with trying to organize people around different issues. And it's very, very hard. You know, it's like, I need, you know, doing voter registration. Not sexy, not exciting, but it's necessary. And trying to get people out there to do that, you know, you see a lot of people, you got to get out there and vote. And I'm like, yeah, come with me, you know, come with me. And I've heard it all from those who say, is it safe to go in that neighborhood, which I got to give them some shade when they say that. I can't help it. Or, you know, people, they're like, yeah, I'm going to show up. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And they just don't show. And even though what you do has a lot of reward.
You have to spend money. You try to spend money to accommodate them, because if you're going to have volunteers in your spot, you want people to be fed and get water and this, that, and the other. And you just spend money to have, let's say, 20 people that signed up. And so you say, okay, I got to have meals for 20 people. I got to have enough water for 20 people. And so you're spending those resources, those hard to come by resources, and trying to do what we've been trained to do to make sure that volunteers are comfortable, and then they don't show up. And how many times have we taken and had to take stuff that we done gathered up for people and distributed to, you know, other volunteers? Or, okay, if we can't find, you know, you might drive by old Joe on the underpass and be like, hey, I got some bagels from this morning.
Yeah, and you know what? Some of the homeless folks, they were like, yeah, I know you did something today. What you got for me? Which really,
thank you.
Know,
they
I
it, they know nobody else ain't going to use it. We have all these meetings and people never come. But I want to thank you, ladies, because we're now in recording time, so we stopped going live here about three or four minutes.
I got to finish cooking anyway.
I want to continue the conversation.
Yes, I will. I thank you for this. This was really great, and I appreciate it.
And
Facebook. We can talk about this brainwashing thing a little bit more.
Yeah, I would. I would really like to explore the brainwashing thing, because I think it has been done to us.
We've been hoodwinked and bamboozled.
Matter of fact, I think that's what I'm going to name the show. We've been hoodwinked and bamboozled. That's next Sunday coming up. Well, I appreciate y'all. And I'll talk to y'all again. And everybody, this is Down South and Dirty with Scott Smith. And I'll see you again next Sunday.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.